Hello, Steve. Hello, Jill. It's time to game classy.
There's a recording in progress.
Oh, yeah. Are you? You make me feel.
Are you doing? Oh, at first I thought you were doing a Michael McDonald.
No, it's Hall & Oates, actually.
Yeah, no. I got it as soon as that, like, after listening for a short while, I figured out it was not Michael McDonald. It was, in fact, Hall & Oates.
Yeah, I'm gonna be that way.
I don't know. I don't know any Michael McDonald songs off the top of my head. Oh,
ain't no stopping us now.
It took a second for my brain to work. It's early.
And then, of course, the his most iconic has got to be,
okay, forget, we're not in love anymore.
Yeah, that's true. But now we got to sing about
Leagues of Voltan. Hit the Leagues of Benton. From tournaments.
I love that you're, you know, we got a lot to talk about at that one, but I love how it's like shocked Pikachu face that, and that Games Workshop would, on their brand new army, make them so strong that everybody would want to play them in tournaments. Like, it's like, what? Like, we thought that Games Workshop would create a bad army. Like, what the fuck are you thinking, you idiots? You stupid fucking idiots. That you would say that Games Workshop would create a brand new army that they have to recoup the cost of the sprues, R&D, and everything else on, that they would do it and create an army that's mediocre. No, you idiot. You stupid idiot.
I have to disagree with you simply based on the fact that they have definitely messed up their new armies by creating new armies that are mediocre. They've done that many times, actually.
Like, yeah, you're probably right, yeah.
The most recent example being the Cruel Boys. The Cruel Boys are, for the most part, pretty bad.
Yeah, and but AOS is different. This is 40k, man.
Well, Necrons have been one of the worst, lowest percentage winning armies since their relaunch.
Yeah, but that's not a new army. That's an old army.
Even though it's new cost, new sprues,
and everything like that. But I'm talking like a brand new released army in for 40k. So it's like, remember when Tau came out? Remember how strong Tau
have been like either busted or terrible. They're the Warlock of 40k.
The Warlock? The movie The Warlock?
No, not the movie.
With Julian
Warlock.
Sands?
I haven't seen that movie in forever. Is that movie good? I don't remember.
It's not good, no.
I remember not liking it, so I'm going to say it wasn't good.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's the standard. If I like it, it's good. If I don't like it, it's bad. It's easy. Easy to know.
Easy. That's exactly.
But yeah, so in World of Warcraft, the Warlock class is always like, it's never remotely, well, I mean, I can't speak for now, but back when I was playing World of Warcraft, so I mean, shit, that was like a fucking decade ago, but still, Warlock had this like really serious problem where the Warlock class was either like fucking broken, like, holy shit, like, why isn't everyone playing Warlock? This class is fucking busted, or like, trash, like this class is unusable, like you can't join our raids because you're playing a Warlock level. so that really feels like Tau is that, but it's funny because I got into a conversation about balance and 40k and like just tournament play in general, and here's the thing, they don't give a fuck about tournament balance. Like they do, because it's like a, I mean, it's like a big PR thing, but it's like, but people like tournament players need to understand that it's literally just PR, because like the percentage of tournament players for any game, and this is not just 40k, this is every game, and even Magic, where like the game where you think there's gonna be the most sweat lord tryhards, like the actual percentage of people who play tournaments versus people who play casually, minuscule.
Sweat lord tryhard is actually the name of my big bad end boss for my D&D campaign, just to let you know.
Sweat lord tryhard, nice. Yeah. Yeah, so like that's because I mean you mean think about it, like when just like, I mean, it's sort of anecdotal, but I mean I have, you know, much data to back it up, but like just you and I personal experience, whenever we would run a tournament at the bunker, like, and there was a big one, there would always be, you know, if there was like 40 players, say, there were only ever, you know, 6 to 7 locals. The majority of locals didn't show up to play in the tournament. That tournament would be full of people from out of state, from like Indiana and from Wisconsin.
New York City.
Because the majority of people don't actually play in tournaments because the majority of people don't care. So I was looking at it and like, and this, so this is the first army that they've had. They had zero external playtesting on because the playtesters kept leaking shit. So they got rid of their external playtesters. So this is the first 40K army since they got rid of the external playtesters that they released.
Remember when they had to release a second edition of the Dark Elves book in sixth edition because of how bad the Dark Elves were tested? And I think they did the same thing with the Dark Eldar too. I'm not 100%. That's going back way before.
I think the Dark Eldar had a really close book release, but I believe it was actually technically two editions. They had like one towards the end of an edition,
yeah,
and then the new edition broke the book, so like it didn't work anymore. So then they actually released a new book pretty rapidly.
This is like, you know, close to 25 years ago.
Oh, you're talking the way back when with that Dark
quarter Elf. Of a century.
I remember that. So here's the thing. I still stand by, I do believe, like, unlike most people who think they don't test these books at all, I do think they test them. But the problem is they test them in friendly games.
Well, they test them in the UK manner is basically what it is.
Well, I mean, it's not even necessarily in UK manner. It's just they test them with studio armies. So they're never going to test with anything optimal. They're testing with armies that like use a little bit of, and here's the thing. If you play Warhammer in this, I'm going to describe a way to play Warhammer that if you play in it, I guarantee you like pretty much every game you have is going to be really fun, no matter what, win or lose. You just kind of use stuff. Like, you're just like, yeah, I'm going to take this hero because he's pretty cool. Got my battle line. I'm going to take these spear dudes, maybe like this chariot because it looks cool. And then like, you know, a couple things here and there. If that's how you build your army, very rarely are you actually going to run into like the huge balance issues with tournaments. The problem is that's how they test the game. That's how they test the armies where it, like, I mean, again, I don't know for a fact, but I feel that is how they test the armies because it's the only way.
Hold on just one second, bud.
Sure.
Yeah. And a pause. Sorry about that.
That's
so
right. Sounds like the recording has returned.
Yes, it has returned. Well, no, I'm waiting on someone to come test out my furnace just to make sure it's up and running because I got a brand new furnace and it's kind of getting cold enough where they can test it. And so the guy said he was going to text me, but I thought he was knocking on the door. But it turns out it was my son upstairs running around in his underwear with a wooden spear that I had built for him, banging it on the walls. And so that someone was knocking at the doors.
Waiting for Guffin.
Yes.
So if that's how you play, if that's how you test your armies, that's how you play, I guarantee you like none of these like huge issues will occur. The problem is when you have someone who like actually, you know, cares about winning, they look at it and they go, oh, well, if I just take 10 of these double flamethrower things, which is not even an army that they could probably even test, because like I said, I think they literally just test with whatever the studio puts together. So they're always going to have like a little bit of everything. So they never test like, what if you take 10 of this single choice? And it's like, oh, this is actually just completely fucking broken. Like there was years ago, but this is years ago now, but one of the earliest, most busted lists was a Sisters of Battle army that I, in my opinion at that time, absolutely like unbeatable. Like you could not beat that army. The thing that stopped it from being a problem, though, is that the army was like $4,500.
Yeah.
Because it was
all metal.
It was tons of metal, and it was like 18 or 19 of their immolator tanks.
Ooh.
And what it did is it exploited the fallback corridor rule. So basically, like, so wait, this is going back in time a little, everybody. But so
Pepperidge Farm remembers.
So the old there was an old fall. There was when you used to fall back in 40K, there was like a fallback corridor thing. And like if you were in a corridor, like if you basically if you fell back towards an enemy unit, you could delete the unit, like you could kill them.
Deleted.
Yes, because like they fall back into the gunfire or whatever the case is. So That being said, what they did is this list was just basically like the Sisters of Battle Tank had a rule where if you get shot by it, no matter what, you fall back. Like that was just like, you know, it's like this rule. It's like, oh, but it's like, oh, if you take a shit ton of them and just put them, you know, basically make a parking lot out of your immolator tanks, you just automatically delete units. It doesn't matter. Like you don't even, you technically don't even need to roll dice because the fallback happens no matter if you do any damage or not. So you literally just put your template down and be like, okay, I touched one of your orcs, so this orc unit is going to fall back, and it's falling back into this tank, and I've blocked off any other way for them to fall back because of my other tanks, so they are just automatically dead, like without actually rolling a dice. And that's super busted. Never was really, like I said, never was really a problem because it was a $4,500 army, and I think one guy used it to win a few tournaments a couple times. The problem is the Leagues of Votan, that is what their army just kind of does. Like yeah. they have special rules where they stack these tokens.
Squat.
So they have these special rules where they stack these tokens, and the tokens basically, the long story short is they automatically hit, they automatically wound, and they ignore saves without actually rolling dice. Very strong. It's very, very powerful. And it's, again, like looking at the rules themselves, like when you look at that chart, you're like, I mean, that's pretty strong, but it doesn't, like the chart itself doesn't seem objectively broken. It's like, okay, I mean, that seems like a powerful rule. But when you actually see how easy it is and how many of the tokens they get, you're like, oh, I see the problem here. It's like, that's too many. It's too many tokens. But it also brought back, I guess this is a previous discussion, because the Tyranids, apparently, when they launched, they basically like were banned. They ended up getting banned until they got an FAQ, because there was just too many things where just like people were like, wait, does this work this way? Like there was like the amount of people going, wait, does this work this way? Like that question was asked in that tone way too many times. So they just were like, well, all right, well, this book's just banned until an FAQ comes out. And it brought back a discussion thing. And I think it's smart, and I hope they just start doing it. But the idea is that all new books, you know, starting with Votan, like, and it's already banned. It's Germany and Canada. Canadian tournaments have both banned Votan.
Oh, yeah. We agree with our German brothers there that we think these Votan are just a little too strong for the tournament right now. Yeah. It's a friendly tournament because it's a Canadian tournament and all Canadian tournaments are friendly. So we want to keep it friendly and no more fist fighting because we know Norm down from Saskatchewan is going to come up with this Votan army. And, you know, sometimes Norm gets two or three Molsons in him, and
No, it's not going to be Norm. It's going to be those Hoosiers from Michigan, and you know it.
Oh, that Michigan players, you know, they're from the States. God bless them. So
they're going to come up here, and they're going to come up here and try and ruin our friendly tournament. They're going to eat all our Timbits.
Canadians don't eat Tim Hortons anymore.
They don't?
No, Tim Hortons got bought up by Burger King or whatever corporation owns Burger King. And they're terrible now, from what I've been told.
Ah, that's a shame.
Yeah, all my Albertan friends have been telling me it's terrible.
I assume they're quite devastated.
Probably.
I mean, the Timbits were a critical part of their culture, from what I understand.
Yeah, just like Wayne Gretzky and Mike Myers, but
you know, it's a shame. So
Canada,
our clear and noble land. Yeah. So the big discussion now is just like, we're just going to ban new books. Like all books are just going to be banned for, like, you know, I don't know, 3 months or until they get an FAQ. And I think that's smart. I think that's good. I think you should absolutely do that. Like it's kind of better for everyone. And I mean this across the board. I mean, like, it's better for like the only person that is actually bad for is, again, like the ultimate sweat lord tryhard who is like willing to who's willing to just drop a grand every time a new army comes out so they can always play like the hottest, most busted thing as fast as possible. And their army is like, you know, it's sprayed black and then, like, I don't know, maybe dry brushed like two colors.
I don't know about you, man, but those League of Votan painted up in the Lego schemes, Those were fucking hot.
Yeah, they look cool. I mean, I think the army's sweet looking. I really like it. I think they're cool.
I don't like the look of the army, but I just like those paint jobs.
Oh, those paint jobs are fucking awesome. Paint jobs are dope as hell. I really like the tanks. They look cool. I like that they actually really look like sci-fi tanks.
I wish they would have made them trains though.
That would have been really cool. Yes.
Yeah, I'm really surprised they didn't do trains and gyrocopters, because those are like two of the things that are pretty synonymous with the squats.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you're not wrong.
But we'll see. It could be in the future.
This is true. Yeah. There's in theory more. So like, and that would be better for everyone kind of like involved in the tournament scene, player wise, TO wise, because you just don't have to deal with so much shit. Cause like, there's going to be times, and there have been times where, you know, there's just ambiguity, and like the TO has to make rulings on it. And then that's like, well, is this ruling like how it's going to be going forward? Cause like, you know, oh, this basically makes this army bad, or this makes this army too strong because they had to, you know, they had to do some ruling on the fly, because they're just like, I don't know, this book's fucking brand new. So the core idea of like books are banned until an FAQ comes out, I support that. I think that that's how they should do it going forward, especially because releases are always weird, and like it can really make, like, let's just say, like, I mean, let's give the competitive player the consideration here and say, you know, like this dude's been practicing and playing and painting his army for a while, and like he's ready for Adepticon. Oh, brand new army came out, shit's all over everything, like your practice was wasted.
I'm gonna disagree with you, but just respectfully, because I do understand what you're saying in terms of like a competitive tournament like that. My feeling is that in order to counter the I have to have the newest army because it's going to be broken and it's going to destroy everyone else at this tournament, just get away from the I won everything style of tournament and go towards more of a narrative tournament, or more of just like a friendly tournament where the rewards aren't necessarily, oh, this guy went 5-0, so he wins. It's more of, hey, everybody liked playing this guy, so maybe he wins this award, and this army's nicely painted, so it wins this award.
Sure.
And this, you know, like that sort of thing, where you have a fun weekend of playing games where you don't have to drop out of it after the first game if you lose.
Yeah. No, it makes sense. But that's the thing that, like as I've been thinking more about it and like seeing, like, funnily enough, the chess cheating scandal recently.
Hey. If you have anal beads up your ass that vibrated a specific time to give you a specific move, that's not cheating. That's playing it smart.
That's just raw dedication. I mean, that's rising to the occasion. Yeah, that's that. I just like that. Like, even in chess, there's just like people with the pros have such fragile egos that if a new good player shows up there, they just want to discredit them in any possible way.
I mean, I got to say though, the anal beads thing, I've never heard that before. And you know what? That's some outside the box thinking right there.
I mean, it's not real. It didn't actually happen.
But I mean, like, someone thought that up.
Magnus did, because he got so butthurt.
Yeah, but
he lost.
Here's the thing about that. And for those who aren't aware, Magnus Carlsen was beat by a young upstart. He's a chess champion, and he got beat by a young upstart
who's beaten multiple grandmasters at this point.
Yeah, he's kind of the new up and comer, but everyone think, well, Magnus was said that he was cheating, and I don't know if it was Magnus or someone else who brought up the fact that they said he was cheating by having electric anal beads put up his butt.
Yeah,
and he would vibrate to give him specific moves.
Yeah, so they at first, because he was mostly, obviously, you know, it was COVID, so there was no IRL chess tournaments.
Yeah.
So they first said he was cheating by, you know, hacking. They were like, ah, he's cheating online. There's no way he's beating these top tier players under his own skills or merit. Like, he's clearly just a cheater, like he's hacking or whatever. So like, that was the first thing. So then when he showed up to a real tournament and like beat pros in person, like, and rather than being like, oh hey, this new player is really talented, he's a really strong player, they came up with the absolutely absurd idea that he's got vibrating anal beads telling him the counter moves.
Someone sitting on the other end of a vibrating anal bead.
Yes, yes, yeah. Like telegraphing and telling him what to do, which is like mind-boggling to me. But again, that's the fragile ego of like competitive.
Exactly. It's like for some odd reason,
hyper competitive people, like their egos just get so fragile, and I don't know why. And it's across everything. It's any game.
Because their self-worth is defined by a stupid baby game designed for babies.
Yeah, I know. So it's wild. So anyway, so that all being said, here's the thing about that. Like with 40K, like I've been thinking of this for a while, and I think I've said it a couple times, but like I don't know how anyone can take that game competitively seriously. Simply for the fact that it's a game that uses dice where you don't have to use standardized shared dice.
Yes.
Like, how can you take that competitively seriously when, like, the thing that is going to be the most volatile about the game is completely unregulated and uncontrolled?
Yep.
There's a reason casinos, everyone uses the same dice, and those dice are only used for a certain amount of time because they need to be mathematically perfect.
Like 40K doesn't necessarily need to be mathematically perfect, but you take the same dice and use it for both players, it's right. Gonna be a little easier to
correct,
you know.
I mean, there's been multiple accounts of people being caught baking dice.
Yeah,
like,
oh, trust me, I've played against some people where I'm like, there's no way those dice are that hot,
like, right? Yeah,
like,
exactly.
These are, I mean, I'm not saying that they were baking the dice, I'm just, those dice are probably it just came out of the mold pour, you know.
Oh, sure. I mean, you can find dice that roll hot. Like, do you remember when there was the GW sets that would just roll hotter?
But you know what though? I think GW purposely makes them so that they roll hotter. That was not like anything. I think that was purposely done so people would buy GW dice.
Well, I know. I think it's because so some of them would roll shitty though. And what it was is it's because they used. What they did, I don't think they intentionally set them up to roll hotter, because I mean that's actually like that requires a lot of like precision and work. But what you can do is you can set them to roll consistently with your finishing process. So consistently doesn't necessarily mean hotter, but it means consistently. So if you had a set of GW dice that always rolled like shit, they're always gonna roll like shit. But if you had a set of GW dice that rolled really well, they're always going to roll really well, because the way they tumbled their dice was just like set up in such a way that it was going to just produce consistent results however it ended up tumbling, because there's some randomness there because of how the dice are machined and then they put them in those rock tumblers.
Yeah,
so I think they just didn't
maybe
tumble them enough. I mean, I don't know, and this could just be fucking me with a tinfoil hat on my head for all I know, but it seemed very like very much that like GW dice sets used to have like a very thorough, like, this dice set's rolling really fucking well a lot.
So to get back on the point,
Votan.
It's that tournaments are really a big waste of your time is basically what it comes down to.
I think traveling for tournaments is silly. I think going to like event style tournaments are great. Stuff like Adepticon. Like Adepticon's, it's an event.
Yeah. I mean, I think anyone saying we are going to teach GW a lesson by doing X is just wasting their time.
Yeah. I mean,
it's like that episode of The Simpsons where Mo steals the Flaming Homer idea.
Yeah.
And then Homer's like, well, you lost yourself a customer. And Moe's like, I can't hear you over the cash register ringing.
Yes.
You
know? Yeah. And that's what I was saying before, where like tournament players are just like, they're not actually that important to the bottom line.
No, not at all.
But they are important to the PR.
Because Steve, who's the most important customer at Games Workshop?
Kitchen table player.
No. That 8-year-old boy who wanders in with the mommy with the pocket. With the checkbook.
Well, that's true. In her jeans and their fucking tight fitting jeans and her fucking man. I'm not gonna lie. There were some hot fucking moms at the bunker, man.
There's stuff going on. You know, there, mashed potatoes.
There were some hot fucking moms at the bunker, man. I'll tell you that. But no, it's not even that. It's just they're a PR issue. But you need to have enough rules that casuals can play. Because that was the problem with AOS. Like when AOS first came out, nobody could play that game. You couldn't play the game if you were in tournaments. You couldn't play that game if you were casual, because nobody knew what the fuck they were doing, because they're just like, the rules came out and they were like, I don't know, do whatever, man.
Yeah, I think that was mainly the I will always say that is the biggest flaw in that system right there, was the fact that I liked their idea of like, oh, just go out and play, but no, that you got to have some rules, man. Yeah, you got to have some rules,
something, because like if there's nothing, it doesn't. I mean, we're talking about a game that doesn't exist anymore. But I mean, the biggest thing is like, if there's no points values for troops, it makes the differences between choices meaningless. Like, because it's like, why would you ever take a Skaven slave? Because you could just make all of your models, storm vermin or whatever. And it's just kind of like, huh, that's weird. So it's just too weird to have nothing. Even for someone who's totally casual, like it's still just like, it's still completely unplayable. Because even like most casual don't play, like they might not play like tournament hardcore pitched battle stuff, but everyone's going to use points really. Like I've never seen anyone really do a lot of narrative stuff outside of an event. Like I've seen people do narrative play in an event, but other than that, I don't think I've ever seen anyone actually like.
I always will throw it out to the guys I did for 30K. I would do the 30K stuff with over at Adepticon. It's that it was a tournament, but it wasn't a tournament. It was more of like, hey, we're just a bunch of guys who want to play the same game. Here are the matchups we'll play, and then the point system doesn't really matter in the end, you know.
Yeah, show up, do cool stuff.
Yeah, show up, get to see really cool painted armies, play a little bit. You drink a little bit, you have some, you maybe. Do that crazy arm grab thing from Predator, that midair handshake thing, and you say,
"Villain, you son of a bitch!"
Exactly. You do that for a little bit, and hey, you got yourself a fun tournament.
Yes, a big fun, a nice fun tournament.
Yeah. Not to say that the 40K friendly wasn't like that, but the 40K actual tournament always just looked miserable. Everyone always just looked miserable playing.
Yeah, if I'm not seeing people like laughing and having a good time, like why am I there? Like I don't want to do that. I mean, I admit, like I was a massive sweat lord, but even then, even when I was at my worst, I've still like. Nothing compared to a few of these guys I've seen like just get into like insane shouting matches at 40K tournaments. It's just like, bro,
bruh.
Yeah. Like I don't want this tournament where we're all sitting around playing with toys to be a fucking series of bra moments. Okay.
bruh. let's chillax, bruh. Chillax, bruh.
Bruh.
Yeah.
This tournament's bussing for real. That's what I want to know. That's what I want to hear.
Yeah. I mean, we'll figure it out eventually. Well, like it's just everybody just needs to calm the fuck down. It's a baby's game for babies.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
where you have space dwarves who are really overpowered right now.
Playing
but we all know in 3 to 6 months they're going to get nerfed anyway.
Yeah, exactly. So I mean, I think the idea is that people want to just have the ban in place and just wait for the FAQ and just be like, we're just going to preemptively make this go away. And I think that's fine. Like
we the Germans believe in very strong rules that you have to play by.
They do.
So we do not want this army because we think the rules are not as German as they could be.
They are too strong. They are far too strong.
In Berlin, we want them to be very strong. Maybe they could get away with that in Bavaria.
No, this is just silly. Of course, the Bavarians would also prefer balance.
They would, but they'd like the balance on top of a pretzel.
That's true.
That's a German joke.
Hans, I could actually go for a pretzel myself right now.
Yes, let's go to Dunshant.
Good.
Zagut.
Zagut.
Then we go to disco and dance. German music.
Discotheque. Yes. We go to discotheque.
Yeah, and they listen to their German disco, which is Kraftwerk. Robot music.
I love Kraftwerk. I don't want to be your sex object. Have no feelings, no self-respect.
I actually, moving away from that, but in continuation, I work with a woman who was from West Germany during the Cold War.
Oh yeah.
Like she was in her 20s in the you know, in Berlin at that time. Or not Berlin. She was actually in West Germany, but she was like telling me about the club scenes, and that was pretty much exactly what she was talking about. It was like all that's like
awesome.
Kraftwerk and like electronic, like weird, like that's the type of American music that they always played in those clubs, was like that weird electronic stuff.
Nice, that's yeah, cool. I like that. I like that. I like German club music. It's cool. German club music. Yeah, it feels very cyberpunk to me.
Well, you know, in reality right now, we spent 30 minutes talking about the League of OTAN and all the crybabies.
Yeah.
Yeah, the try-hard crybabies. but what I do want to talk about, have you watched any more of Rings of Power?
I haven't.
You haven't. You are a terrible, terrible Lord of the Rings fan. You should be ashamed of yourself.
It's true. I'm not a true fan.
No. So I wanted to just talk about how much I absolutely adore that show.
Yeah, I mean, I hear it's awesome. I'm definitely going to watch the fuck out of it. I've been busy.
I think that there is really funny to watch like all these people who like within the first like one or two episodes just cried and said this show's bullshit and everything else and were complaining and hoping that the show failed. But in reality, it's a very wonderful Lord of the Rings show. It's slow paced. It's kind of, I don't want to say pondering because that makes it sound, that sounds bad, but it's like, it really dwells on how pretty everything looks in this show.
Leisurely.
Yeah, it's very leisurely.
Leisurely. Like, that's like, the word you want.
There is a level, like there's no level of threat, kind of, but there is. And it's very Lord of the Rings.
Lord of the Rings. The threat's always like in the distance until it's in your face.
Exactly. Exactly. So it's kind of wonderful to watch the show. And it's like everyone's just kind of being, like you get a good sense of how these people are living and like how.
Yeah, I mean, I'm super excited to watch it. I really am. Like I said, I've just been busy doing lots of stuff.
And spoiler for last night's episode or yesterday's episode, because we're recording this on Saturday and it was Friday when it dropped, that Eminem looking guy who everyone thought was Sauron is probably not Sauron.
Dun, 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 dun.
Yeah. So it once again opens up, who is Sauron?
That's right, because that's going to be that's the big thing, because Sauron is because he's crafting the Rings of Power, so he's going to pretend, he's currently pretending to be an elf, if I'm not mistaken.
Because
he's got to craft it with Celebrimbor, right? Like that's
yes, but at that time I think he was pretending to be an elf, but he wasn't pretending, he was actually like Sauron and he was just going by his elf name but not really.
He was just out of his armor, essentially.
Yeah, I think I'm not 100% sure. It's been a long time since I read any of the histories of Middle Earth books.
Yeah,
and I've been trying to avoid spoilers on it, so I haven't gone back and been like, wait a second, according to this.
And also, of course, just to stick it in the craw of all the angry right wing racist misogynist chuds who were hoping for it to fail. It is the most successful Amazon show of all time. Sorry.
Yeah. No,
womp,
I really.
Womp.
Yeah, and it's like, I really enjoy spending time with the dwarves. Like that's like the best part. The Durin and his wife, I think her name is Disa, like are so wonderful to watch. It's just, I want an entire show of Durin hanging out with Elrond. It's so good.
I'm excited. I'm getting even more excited to watch it now.
Yeah. And the Numenor stuff is pretty great too. Like how much they hate the elves in Numenor.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of fun to watch because Galadriel's there, and I could see that. But I think you and I were talking really about how Lord of the Rings is based. I was basing my argument off the fact that Tolkien bases everything off medieval literature, and medieval literature really doesn't understand the concept of a story arc. There is no, in most medieval literature, there is no growth of the character. I'm talking like ballads and stuff like that.
Right. Beowulf, but like the strongest king is the strongest king from the beginning to end. He never changes. His character does not change. There's no nuance. There's no depth. He is the strongest king.
Yeah. There is the hero's journey, which develops a little bit later, but Tolkien really doesn't do too much with that. I mean, he does, but it's more of, it's not like you don't get too much into the personality of the person that is going through the hero's journey.
Yeah, it's more of like, what is it? Is that like, it's more of an epic? Is that what the, is that, would that be the proper writing term?
Yeah, well, an epic is just a poem.
Right.
So yes, Lord of the Rings technically would be a epic like that. But no, like the hero's journey is like, oh, you know, you get a call to adventure, you get some people to help you out, you get, you have to reject the adventure, you get tempted, you usually will feel sorry for what you did.
I would then, definitely fall at the tempted part, so yeah, me.
It's like, it's very
I'd be like, yo, Medusa, I hear you're super hot. Let me just put this blindfold on and we'll just, you know, take care of business, right?
Business. But then you have Galadriel, who then they're actually trying to give arcs to these characters in Rings of Power. And I think that's what doesn't jibe with some people, because you can't really have Galadriel be Galadriel at the start of the show. And then she doesn't change.
Right.
Because that wouldn't make any sense.
It also would probably not be very entertaining.
That's what I'm saying. It's like, it would not be entertaining at all.
Yeah.
In fact, even Peter Jackson gives Galadriel a tiny character arc inside Lord of the Rings.
Yeah. Aragorn too.
Yeah. Well, Aragorn has a little bit bigger one in the movie. Aragorn in the
That's
movie.
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've said that before. Yeah. Movie Aragorn's way better than book Aragorn.
Yeah. Well, pretty much all movie. I think the movie improves on the books quite a bit.
I agree with that. Yeah.
I don't know if there's maybe.
It does get rid of Tom Bombadil, which is awesome.
Yeah. I think Faramir in the books is a little better than in the movie, but it's not bad.
Yeah, I think he did a really good job. I mean,
Faramir in the movies, the problem is that they give him a little bit of the I'm trying to please my father.
Yes,
which he still does in the books, but it's not as egregious as in the movies.
True. You know, but you know what's actually I forgot to mention this, but you know what's weird? You know how people, like, everyone was just like absolutely shitting all over the Hobbit movie, the new one.
They still do. Yeah.
Yeah. So here's the thing about that. I like somewhat recently listened to the Hobbit books.
Yeah.
Or book.
Yeah.
And it made me like really question like what people were expecting and what they were like so jagged off about in the movie. Like, was it because
they wanted to fuck the dwarves, Steve? They wanted to fuck the dwarves. Everybody had at least one dwarf on there that they wanted to fuck, and they felt bad that they wanted to fuck that dwarf. So that's why they were upset.
Oh, I see. Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
It was Bomber, right?
It doesn't matter. Everybody's got a type.
It was Bomber.
Yeah, it's like, you know, some people wanted Thorin, some people wanted
Feely or Keely.
Yeah, Feely, Keely. It's like, if you weren't into Thorin, but you were kind of into Thorin, you were probably into Keely and Feely, or you were into Dwalin, because Dwalin is like a bear.
Nobody wanted the kid who said he's going to shove the axe right up his Jackson.
Well, you know, some people do, because some people are weird. Don't yuck on other people's yums, Steve. Don't yuck on other people's yums.
Fair
but
enough.
That's why I think people were upset, was that they were really into one of the dwarves, and they had to make a choice. And they didn't like that they had to make that choice. Okay, I got to pause, and then we'll get restarted right in a second.
Okay, very good.
Ayo, you paused, and you muted.
The recording is in progress.
So basically, with Rings of Power, I have grown to like the show more. I will agree that I think the first episode was pretty rough. I was not a big fan of the first episode, but I think it's kind of grown to where I'm like, oh, I can dig this. And I'm kind of hoping that the mysterious stranger is Gandalf, because that would explain a lot about like his love of hobbits and other things, which is kind of cool.
Oh, the Meteor Man?
not Meteor Man is in the Bill Cosby vehicle, but
it's not Bill Cosby.
What?
It's not Bill Cosby. It's
no, but Bill Cosby's in that movie.
Is he in Meteor Man?
Yeah, he plays the crazy homeless dude.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah, who is the Meteor Man though?
No, everyone thinks it's Steve Harvey, but it's not.
It's definitely not Steve Harvey. Yeah. It's absolutely not Steve Harvey.
I'm going to look at this right now. Here we go. Robert Townsend. That's who plays.
Robert Townsend.
Yes.
Meteor Man. I loved Meteor Man as a kid.
Yeah. I remember watching it once or twice. I don't, you know, whatever.
That and Blank Man. I love those movies when I was a kid.
I did love Blank Man. just the wheelchair scene. Yeah, that movie did not age well. No one, that's the reason why no one talks about Blank Man, is that movie did not age.
Most, you know, most movies from the 90s that weren't, actually, no, I'm going to be so bold as to say most movies from the 90s have just not aged well.
Yes. But what I wanted to do with the Lord of the, with the Rings of Power is I wanted to do a comparison with House of the Dragon, which I've also been watching. And as I said, I love all fantasy. I'll give all fantasy a try. House of the Dragon is also incredibly well, but for like the exact opposite reason. So Rings of Power is great because it's this grand scope show. Like, it's big. You could tell that it's got big things going on. Mm. House of the Dragon comparatively right now is very small. So it's all about like politics and intrigues and like how these, you know, the infighting within this family. There's not a lot of like, I'm going to this location, I'm going to this location. It's very small.
And Milo from Morbius.
Yes. It's Morbin time, Steve.
It's Morbin time. It's Morbin time in the Game of Thrones.
It's Morbin time in the Game of Thrones. No, that's Matt Smith is fantastic in the show, though. He really, he's a scenery chewer in there, and I quite like it.
I've only seen the clip where he beats the shit out of the messenger.
Yeah, it's more about like him walk, like everyone's having a good time and him just walking in and giving everybody the finger. Pretty great. So that's why I'm interested in seeing what Disney Plus, the creator of the worst shows on the planet, is going to do next. Hey, you know, I'm not the guy who's like the first episode of She-Hulk, right, was horrendous. And
I mean, it looked fucking awful.
And it's not in for the things that, for the reasons that everybody says, because people who say it's awful usually are because it's like, it's a girl.
I mean, all of the, I'll just be blanket statement. I think that every one of the Marvel TV shows looks like fucking dog shit. And the one that I've seen, the only one that I saw any bit of was Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And what a fucking pile.
Yeah. Well, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. was not really a Disney Plus show.
Well, I'm not saying that was a Disney Plus show. I'm just saying like it's a Marvel show.
Dude, that was a 1 hour weekly comedy drama. It was not designed to be high art.
It was a pile.
When you have a show like that where you have 24 episodes a season, don't look for it to be anything more than we're cranking these shit out. No
episodes.
I will say I liked Loki quite a bit, and I was like, wow, this is some really high production value and blah blah blah. WandaVision was great for the first like 4 or 5 episodes, and the last 2 episodes kind of just pooped the bed.
Does Loki turn into a lady horse and get fucked in the show? Because I mean, if so, I want to watch it.
Yes, he does.
Hell yeah.
Then Captain America and, well, not Captain America, Falcon and the Snowman, Falcon and the Winter Soldier, whatever it's called. That show was boring. It was just like, that's its biggest sin, was it was just boring. And then they did Hawkeye, which could have been very good, but the problem was that it wanted to be a 1988 Shane Black action movie, Christmas action movie that, you know, came out in the summer. And it just couldn't drop enough F-bombs and sexual, like really bad sexual references that are really out of date in 2022. So when it was not allowed to do that, it couldn't achieve what it wanted to be.
It couldn't be Samurai Cop.
Not Samurai Cop. It couldn't be, you know, Lethal Weapon. It couldn't be Die Hard. It couldn't be, you know, those type of movies. The Other Guys, not The Other Guys, The Good Guys. I think that's the one right with, yeah, that's the other Shane Black one. Or Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. It couldn't be those movies. That's what it wanted to be.
I see.
So when you take out the element that makes those movies work, of course the TV show's not going to work. And then what was the one that they did right before
Moon Knight?
Moon Knight. Oh, Moon Knight was kind of garbage. It was weird, but it was kind of garbage.
The only thing I know about Moon Knight is there was a crocodile lady that everyone drew a lot of pornographic imagery of.
Hippo.
Hippo. Yes.
Yes, of course. And that one could have been better, but it was like, once again, it's like every one of these shows just devolve in the last episodes into a big CG fight fest. And you know what? You don't need that on TV. That's something you do in the movies. You don't need it on TV.
Right. And since it's in every one of your movies, it's not exactly a spectacle when you put it on the small screen.
Yeah. Exactly. And but what I will give She-Hulk is that She-Hulk is leaning pretty heavy into the half-hour weekly sitcom tropes, which I think works for She-Hulk. It's not great. The writing is still kind of shitty, but it's fitting its genre fairly well.
Yeah. You know, that's probably something that they should have considered doing, just actually making like an actual just like straight up sitcom, but using like comic book characters.
Well, that's kind of what She-Hulk is.
Is that what they're trying to do?
Yeah. The problem is that that's not how they advertise it. That's not how. Yeah. American audiences are really fucking dumb. You have to tell them what they're watching.
It's true.
You know, very rarely does something like Lost work, where it's like, oh, wait, this isn't what we were expecting. You know, like that's not how it works.
It's a rare condition in this day and age to read any good news on the newspaper page.
However, I do like that She-Hulk has brought back Mark Lynn Baker, star of Perfect Strangers, into a TV role.
Cousin Larry?
Cousin Larry is on She-Hulk as She-Hulk's dad.
Nice.
Exactly. I was like, and like, I think it was the second episode. I was like, oh, Brooklyn Baker.
Cousin Larry.
Yeah, that was pretty wonderful. But anyway.
I love Cousin Larry.
So back to gaming stuff. Do we have any specific gaming stuff we would like to also hit on this week?
I mean, the big one was Leagues of Votin'.
Yes, the Leagues of Votin'. I was, you know, because I've been kind of out of it the last few weeks just because I've been on a project that's been taking up a lot of my time. So I haven't had a lot of chance to really go over it. I did want to bring up something that the Games Plus auction is coming up in 2 weeks.
Oh,
and I'm interested in seeing how War Machine does there. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, you think so what's your prediction?
So my prediction is that it's going to go for a little bit more than normal. Like, cause right now it just goes for absolute nothing.
Yeah. Just absolutely trash.
Yeah. But I think that it might go for a little bit more because of some people who might be interested in it. But I think people who truly know War Machine or are planning on getting into this new edition of War Machine are probably going to get the new stuff as opposed to the old stuff. If that makes sense.
I think that my opinion is that my prediction is that the War Machine players will be savvy. So things that are not existent in the new edition will go for nothing. And people will be grabbing and competing over things that will be viable in the new edition.
That could very well be. I don't think there's going to be a lot of people who are older players that are going to be buying stuff at the auction, unless they are older players who sold off their collections when they could and are now like, well, I'll get back into it because it's probably going to be cheap.
Yeah, I mean, that's a possibility. I don't know. Like I said, I mean, when they first announced it, I thought it was going to just completely implode and like be a miserable failure, but they ended up selling so much they had to disable their internet sales. So I guess I don't know what the fuck I'm talking about.
Yeah. Cool. I mean, we really don't know. It's funny because a buddy of mine who's putting stuff in the auction, he was like, I was like, what are you putting in? And he's like, oh, you know, my War Machine, Flames of War, and Wild West Exodus. I'm like, so you're planning on getting like a dollar for that?
Yeah, that's not gonna be much.
Yeah. Nobody's playing that shit right now.
Do you remember when Wild West Exodus was like all big time? Like that game was huge for like a hot minute.
Yeah, well then the creator came out as a racist piece of shit.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah, well they did some stuff that people were like, well, you really shouldn't do that, and he's like, my heritage. And but it's like, dude, we're just saying don't put your characters with a bunch of nooses. Like, that's not appropriate in 2019 or 18, whenever this happened.
It was a while ago.
Yeah, it was a while ago. It's just like
the woke left, cancel culture
has screwed this up. Has screwed up my Confederate character carrying a noose.
Yes, cancel culture has ruined my KKK army.
I was also talking with a friend that we found it's weird that even the workshop generally maybe not holds its value, but you could get a decent amount back for workshop stuff at auction or when you're selling it online.
Always.
Yeah. You can get a decent, you get a decent buck. It's not going to be, you know, cost, but it's going to be, you're going to get it for, you're going to sell it for at least, you know, maybe 20% off.
Yeah, absolutely. The it's certainly a good, good return.
But we did find it. We were talking. It's like, you know, metal minis, like metal historical minis, generally will hold their value. Surprisingly, it's not like those are ever super discounted. I mean, like some of the bad ones are, but like, you know, standard, like really good ones like Perry Brothers or Foundry, Artisan, Brigade, those never really lose their value as much. Those generally will go for a bit. Like the only way that you lose money on them is when you take them to auction and nobody really knows what they are. Right. But if you take them to auction and you got like three or four people who know what those minis are, you're going to make a decent buck on them.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah, it's just, you know, Grognards be Grognarding.
It's true.
I've been looking into it a little bit more with the metal minis because I've been working on the muskets and tomahawks and looking into today. I'm meeting with some people. We're talking about playing Silver Bayonet or Dracula's America. That was the other one that we're
Dracula's about. America.
This is an interesting game. Like, so Studio Tomahawk, which is the guys who do Saga and muskets and tomahawks. And, you know, Saga is always like has a lot of people who love to play Saga.
Mm.
I can't understand it because you're playing a Viking game. And 90% of the figures you're playing, like, yes, you do have like three or four really cool looking Vikings in your army, but you're like the majority of your army is a bunch of like nobodies and potato sacks. Like, yes. And I don't want to paint a bunch of potato sacks.
But why not?
Because painting potato sacks is boring.
I see.
And I want to paint the guys with the really cool helmets and the Varangian guard and all this really cool shit. And I don't want to paint the guy with a potato sack and a sling, right? But
potato sack.
It's a potato sack. I just don't care about that as much.
Right on.
So, I don't remember where I was going with that.
You're talking about potato sacks.
Oh, I was talking about Saga. That's right. But Studio Tomahawk actually has a decent list of games. Like kind of fun, smaller scale, historical games that don't play like historical games. They play more like either narrative. It's kind of what, Osprey is trying to do with their like smaller game books, but it's more the rules make more sense and they're smaller and they're more compact.
Okay.
They do have the one game Congo that I kind of like, but I really shouldn't admit that I like the game Congo because it seems kind of racist and it's a game that only Europeans could really put out. Like, you can't be an American company and put out Congo.
What if it was an adaptation of the hit film Congo?
That's different, though. I would definitely like an Ernie Hudson and a gorilla named Amy to or who was the bad guy in that movie?
John Goodman?
No, it was Tim Curry, I think, was the bad guy in that movie.
I think it was Tim Curry.
Yes. I'm looking at it right now.
The only place that has been untouched by capitalism. Space.
Yes, it was Tim Curry, and Laura Linney is also in that movie.
Tim Curry rules. What a fucking lord, dude.
That I remember, so cool. God, remember everybody wanting to go to Congo because it was like going to be the next Jurassic Park, and it was not the next Jurassic
Park. It was definitely not the next Jurassic Park.
Holy shit, you know who was in Congo? Joe Don Baker.
Who the fuck is Joe Don Baker?
God, how do you not know Joe Don Baker? Star of Mitchell?
What the fuck is Mitchell? Are you fucking with me right now? I've never heard of Mitchell.
It's a classic episode of Mystery Science Theater 3000.
Ah, I see.
Yes. I would highly recommend everybody looking up the Mystery Science Theater episode Mitchell.
I'll have to give it a shot. I mean, I've watched a lot of Mystery Science Theater 3000, but as anyone who's watched a lot of Mystery Science Theater 3000 will attest to, I think there always seems to be episodes you haven't seen.
Oh yeah, always.
Like, no matter what, like, you just be like, oh, I've seen them all. It's like, are you sure? It's like, yeah, for sure. And then it's like, wait, no, I've never seen this one. that's like a real phenomenon.
Mitchell is, and I feel kind of bad because Mystery Science Theater 3000 did a I think they did a dirty on Mitchell.
Yeah,
Mitchell is actually not a bad movie. It's actually a pretty fun 70s like like schlubby cop movie.
There's definitely a few of those that have been on MST3K, no question, that are like, it's like, why is this movie on here? It's not bad. And then of course there's things like Mac and Me.
Oh yeah. Well, Mac and Me deserves everything it got. I saw that movie in the theater. No, Mitchell is actually pretty great. It has Linda Evans in it, and our perennial horror mainstay John Saxon is also in it.
John Saxon, is that Maniac Cop?
John Saxon, it was the dad from Nightmare on Elm Street.
Right. Yes. The sheriff. He's like 9 out of 10 times he's a sheriff.
Yeah, 9 out of 10 times he's a cop is basically what it is. He was also in Enter the Dragon, and
wasn't he in Maniac Cop? I thought he was a cop in Maniac Cop. Maybe I'm forgetting. No,
he could very well.
I know Bruce Campbell was obviously.
Yeah, Bruce Campbell was the cop. No, that wasn't. I know what the guy you're talking about. He's got the big chin.
Yeah,
that's not John Saxon. John Saxon was also in.
Okay, that's gonna bug the shit out of me.
The horror comedy My Mom's a Werewolf. he's just Danger, not Danger. Is it Danger Diabolique? It's an Italian horror movie that people really, really love.
Man, I really want to see Barbarian.
Yeah, I know. You know my feelings on that.
Yeah. Well, Justin Long, you know, you got to deal with him.
I just can't.
You gotta. You have no choice. You know.
Did you see that they're redoing not Boogeyman, Jeepers Creepers? Speaking of Justin Long,
really?
Yeah. They're doing a version of Jeepers Creepers where the director is not like a murderer, pedophile, or whatever the fuck the guy had got in trouble for.
A lot of crimes.
Yeah,
if I remember correctly, like it was a lot of bad crimes.
Like he was a very, very bad man.
Yeah, he was not a good person. Like very bad.
Well, that does go to the eternal question: is can you separate the art from the artist?
I still stand by. You can if they're dead.
You can if they're dead. Absolutely correct.
Yep, you can.
As long as that person is not getting money off of the art, it's okay for the art.
Yep, you can if they're dead. That's an easy peasy thing to think about. Yeah. And then you know, there's some interesting stuff. I really want to read into it because I've only seen like a few blurbs about it on Twitter. But obviously, every time this comes up, you know, there's one name that always gets thrown in the ring, of course, which is Howard Phillips Lovecraft, who of course was a raging racist, as far as everyone knows, and I mean, yeah, he was. But apparently there's like a recent like series of like a lot of letters that he wrote that some dude is like transcribing and like, you know, like publishing, and he either has published them or is publishing them in like a collected works thing. But apparently towards the end of his life, Lovecraft actually recanted. He did not go down in the end being a belligerent racist. He was actually like, apparently saw the error of his ways, which
would be interesting.
Yeah. I was like, huh. All right. I mean, that's nice. I mean, it's not, I'm not saying like, oh, everyone quick jump, forgive Lovecraft, but it's more like, huh. Okay. I mean, that's just for me, I was just, it was more like a, well, that's nice to hear.
You know, that's a weird thing. You know, I was an English major, got my degree in classic English writing, and I could give two shits less about the author most of the times when I'm reading, which is weird because I do believe in Marxist interpretations of literature, but the, you know, where you, that a lot of that involves the author and the author's intent while writing. And a lot of other things involved as well.
Yeah, I don't like reading into intent. I'm a big fan of what's on the page matters most, simply because like intent can be so subjective.
Yeah, I can never really care. I just don't care too much about the author and their like writings and letters and stuff like that. And I think it's mainly because I think that all people are just awful. So yeah, I mean, it's like, I just don't need anything to reaffirm how awful someone is.
Right. It's like whenever someone's like, oh my God, I can't believe insert this celebrity did this insert horrible thing. It's like, you can't, you really can't, you can't believe that someone with a lot of money and a lot of power comparatively to a regular person who does horrible shit as well, could have done something that, you know, a regular person would also have done.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. That always kind of bugged. That's the particular aspect that bothers me. It's like, why do you hold someone who is actually probably far more likely to do heinous shit because they're far more likely to get away with it then you know, why would you hold them to a higher standard? Like, what were you, why would you expect them to be better? You know.
Yeah, I think for the problem is most people, most people are very, very susceptible to art and literature, as even though they might say they are not.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
You know, and in most cases, a lot of people like will put unintentionally racist things in writing or unintentionally problematic things in writing.
Oh, sure.
Now, normally, as a well-rounded human being, you'd be able to read something and go like, oh, this is problematic.
That's why it's important to have someone fucking look over your shit.
Well, no, this is problematic. I don't necessarily believe in this, but I can understand that maybe the author did and they're inputting it into this character. And I don't necessarily have to live my life that way. But you get shitlords who read stuff like
American Atlas Psycho Shrugged. And they're like, I am Patrick Bateman.
they read American Psycho. I am Patrick Bateman. Or they read Fight Club and they think that, you know,
they're Tyler Durden. Listen here. You're not Tyler Durden.
Or you get politicians who read Atlas Shrugged and think that, you know, they are John Galt.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm not the parasite.
Exactly. I'm not the parasite. I'm the guy who creates trains.
Yeah. It's just so wild to me. I don't get it. And it's just funny because, you know, another guy that always gets brought up in all these discussions over, like, you know, holding people higher, I guess, or whatever, is Keanu Reeves. And I mean, Keanu Reeves, he seems like a lovely person. He seems like a very nice man. Now, but here's the thing, and this actually feeds into my point. Every time I hear some story about Keanu Reeves being this like amazing, like caring human, I swear it's like people have never met a regular nice person before. And it's just like, so Keanu Reeves, you're giving him all this like insane praise for just basically being like a normal nice guy, like a polite normal person. Like,
you know, I like the way that you think, but maybe that's just that some people just never meet nice people.
maybe that's what it is. Maybe they just met people that are so shitty. They think that he's this like incredibly saintly person when he's just like being like an average nice guy.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm saying is like people's lives are so miserable in 2022 that they see a nice guy and they're like, oh, well,
who's just doing like regular, like human level. Like, I'm a polite human. I'm a polite and functional member of society.
Well, and you also got to remember, you're seeing a lot of this online. And if people are basing their entire lives off things that they see online, that's where a lot of the problems come in.
That's true. That's why you get the QAnon.
That's where you get QAnon. You're
not wrong.
Exactly. All right. So any other gaming stuff, at least we should talk about.
Dude, I'm gonna be honest with you, man. I've been playing so much fucking Total War. It's so good.
Oh, you know what I wanted to talk about? The Dune Kickstarter.
Dune?
Yeah, the new Dune game that they have.
They're doing a new Dune game?
Yes, it's not the classic Dune board game, which is a very, very good board game.
Yeah, it's a phenomenal game. I love that game.
Yeah, it's like there was
we played that game.
I've played that game numerous times.
No. We played it. You and I.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah, it's but I mean, I've played that game in both in Dune form and Rex form.
Yes. Yeah, we played Rex, which was dope. That game was really cool.
That game is very cool. And it's kind of a shame that Rex doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah, it's a shame. Well, I mean, poor one out for Fantasy Flight. Barely exists as a company now.
Yeah, but luckily I still have my old edition of what's the game Rex was based off of?
Twilight Imperium.
Yes. Was it Cool Mini or Not? I believe it's Cool Mini or Not. Yeah, Cool Mini or Not put out a new board game called Dune War for Arrakis.
All right.
It is a super mini and component heavy game. One of the bigger ones I've seen in a long time.
Okay.
And it's mostly a two-player game of the Harkonnens versus the Atreides. However, you can play it four-player where it's 2v2.
Huh, and it's a minis game?
It's not a minis game though. It's a board game that is very minis heavy.
Ah, I see.
So yeah, I mean, you know, and Cool Mini or Not, they're always just like, make it more components.
That's true. That is kind of their thing.
I tried watching how to play this game and I was like, I can't do it. I can't understand this game.
That's great.
There's so much stuff going on.
Yeah, this is too much.
Yeah, there's something like 120 minis that are coming in the box.
Did I tell you that that's how I talked myself out of getting into the Bloodborne game? I was like, man, I really want to get that Bloodborne minis game. It'd be really cool. And then like I actually looked at how fucking many figures were in the Bloodborne game, and I was just like, you know what? I'm gonna pass. I couldn't do it.
So I wanted to point this out to some people, because I know we talked about this with a previous Kickstarter, is that so in order to get everything, it's $160, right? Not ridiculous. It's a little on the higher end, but not terrible.
Yeah, that's not out of control. Because the last one we talked about was out of control. It was crazy priced. I don't remember what it was.
That was the, I want to say the Macross game.
Was it? I don't know.
It
was the recent Kickstarter we talked about that was just fucking like ludicrously expensive.
I think that I want to say it was either Macross or the Marvel Zombicide.
It was the Marvel Zombicide. It was the one that was like the opposite of a deal on pricing.
Yeah. It was like you save $20 if you spend $600. This one is that it, so the carry-all pledge is $160. You basically get everything in there. In order to get that, you still have to pay on top of that $160, $62 in shipping.
Whew. Yeah, well, shipping's a nightmare right now. Shipping's a problem right now.
And that's only if you live in the continental United States.
Yep, shipping is out of control. That's been hurting a lot of people, especially Magic, like Secret Lairs.
Yeah,
that's been a big thing. Like Secret Lairs is a thing that made Wizards drops that is like special, you know. There are like a limited edition card variant. They're usually pretty desirable cards that have like cool or alternative artworks, and they also do like exclusive or like weird crossover sets. So like they did a Stranger Things one.
Yeah.
So like, and like the, but they were not reskins of cards. They were literally like new cards that had Stranger Things. So like the 11 card, it's the only card with that function. Like the only card that does what 11 does is the card 11. So, you know, there's some people who are salty about that, obviously, for different reasons. But besides the point is, the Secret Lairs are reasonably priced. I think they're like $30. They're not bad. But some dude was posting about, he lives in Australia. So he's like, for me to buy two Secret Lairs, it is triple the price of the actual Secret Lairs just in shipping.
Yeah,
I think his like order was like $60 for two Secret Lairs, and his shipping was like $96.
So if in this game, if you live in Australia and want Dune or for Arrakis, it'll cost you $75 in shipping.
Whew.
With on top of that, if you live in New Zealand, it's $90.
Whew.
So our poor Kiwi friends, even though this game is customs friendly, will still cost $90 to ship out there.
Boy, howdy, that is brutal.
If you live in Morocco, Somalia, or South Africa, it will cost upwards of $160, so twice the cost.
And you know what's good? Moroccan food. Moroccan food's fucking delicious.
You know, one day I would like to go to Marrakesh. I'm just saying. Or Casablanca.
Casablanca?
I would.
That's the pornographic version of Casablanca.
Yes. Casablanca. It's just Casablanca.
Yes, the ass is all caps.
Yes, exactly. And the only other one is the highest, though, is if you live in Bolivia, French Guiana, Guadalupe, and Martinique, it will cost you upwards of $175 to have it shipped.
God damn.
Exactly.
You know what? I think that's going to be the real thing that causes 3D printing to become the bigger than it's likely to be. It's just fucking shipping costs, dude.
Yeah.
That's outrageous.
Yes. So and they will not even ship if you live in Afghanistan, Cuba, which I think is a crime, Iran, Kazakhstan, Russia, Ukraine, and Venezuela.
Well, you could always just get your shit shipped to Puerto Rico and grab it if you're Cuban. So
Puerto Rico.
Who does not want to wear the ribbon?
I just like Puerto Rico, the board game, because that's what you have to do when you win.
You have to go Puerto Rico.
Yes, that's exactly it. All right. So I think that was like
Shout out to Puerto Rico. I hope if we have any Puerto Rican listeners.
Oh, that's right. Puerto Rico, it got hit with that hurricane.
Yes. If we have any Puerto Rican listeners, I hope you are and your family are doing well.
And they're sitting there right now in their hurricane wrecked house going, oh, thank God these two gaming podcasters are thinking about us.
Yes. And you know what? You're very welcome. I mean, I donated, didn't you? I did.
I hate donating to causes like that because I think my taxes from the federal government should go to help people.
Oh, that's true. But I mean, we're the fact that we've been doing Puerto Rico dirty for like 200 years or whatever, you know, probably has something to do with that.
And not quite 200 years. I mean, the Mexican-American War was what, 1900, right around that time, 1912. Yeah. It's been about 100 years.
Yeah. So we've been doing them dirty for a long time. Yes. I also don't donate to organizations. I donate directly. So that's a thing that's important.
Well, yeah, I wouldn't donate to organizations, but the organization that I do donate to is the federal fucking government that should be fucking helping its citizens.
I mean, you are absolutely correct. And I will not contest what you just said in any way. That is absolutely true.
It's like, no, it's not that I don't like paying taxes. I like paying taxes when my taxes go to help people. That's what it should be fucking doing.
Yes. When your taxes do what they say they're supposed to do on the tin.
Yeah. That's what I mean. Like, it's always like people like my uncle who lives in Indiana is always like, well, you know, it's like, well, you pay so much higher taxes. I go, but I can drive on my fucking roads. You can't.
Roads
are terrible.
That is true. Also, you have to live in Indiana.
You have to live in Indiana.
Which wouldn't be worth paying $0 in taxes.
I know. Trust me. It's like I go down the block from my house and there's like there's food and shopping and everything like that. You have to travel like 12 miles to get anywhere worthwhile.
Yeah, people live here and there aren't giant billboards with fetuses on them.
Yeah, that's true, too. Go to the Game Classy Facebook page. It's the best way you can communicate with us, Steve and I, even for right now, because Facebook is a goddamn nightmare.
Yeah, I mean, if you really want to get a message to us, message to me guaranteed, you got to send it to me on Twitter. And I think you can send a message to Joe on Insta.
On the Instagram. Steve is at command_throw. I am on the Instagram at Game Classy Joe. I will be posting some Blood Angel stuff I've been working on lately.
Nice.
I've been working on the Blangles. And I actually 3D printed a full Thunderhawk gunship. So
yeah, it looked nice.
Yeah, it actually came out pretty nice. There are some things that I learned that I need to fix when I'm printing a Thunderhawk gunship if I ever decide to do it again. But we'll see if that ever happens.
Yeah. I mean, I think I want to get one at some point. Like, I think I'll need one for Old World at least.
Yeah. I mean, trust me. Like, the only reason not to get a 3D printer is if you care about playing in a Games Workshop store. And they won't let you play in a Games Workshop store with 3D printed models.
Also, possibly, I mean, how fragile are those models?
They can be, but I mean,
if you transport a lot, it might not be worth it to do like a big 3D printed army if you're going to the places a lot with it. Also, I mean, I love plastic glue, so that's an important factor.
well, resin plastic glue doesn't work on resin, and it's no more fragile than Forge World or Finecast,
which I found both were too fragile for me.
Yeah. Plastic survives longer, but you have to remember that not everything was put into plastic for Old World.
True.
So
yeah, we'll have to see that. I mean, that's going to be a big thing. Like, what are the, we don't really know what the models are going to be like for, you know, it could be, they could be doing something, you know, really, really new. Like they could be doing optimized rank and file, which would be interesting. I mean, I don't think that's what they would do, but I would really like to see optimized rank and file. And for anyone wondering what that is, that's things like Mantic, where like your rank and file troops are 2-3 piece models. Like they're not very many pieces. Like there's few the models are in as few pieces as possible with the intent that you're going to use a lot of figures. So you don't want to assemble, you know, 118 part figures.
We'll see. And like even with Warmaster, which was all metal when it was released, people tend to forget that those spear tips would break off.
Oh, they break like crazy.
Yeah. And those are even harder to fix than like resin.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, yes, going back, Instagram, you can get in contact with me at Game Classy Joe. The best way you can help out the podcast is comment, and subscribe on the iTunes. You could also like, comment, and subscribe on the YouTubes where we put up the cast. It'll be interesting. You know, I haven't checked on, see if anybody's written any comments on our webcast.
Has anyone called us libtards again? That was pretty good.
Not that I've seen in a long time, but someone did ask, like, on the YouTube page, what's the best episodes with Katana Guy? And I'm going to be honest, if you're listening to this cast right now, whoever asked that, I have no fucking clue. Like, these casts kind of blend in together for me.
Yeah. I mean, if you really want one, I would say every episode with me, the master of the immaculate Japanese Nihon Tensei, which is Japanese genius, wielder of the blade, my Tanto, my Wakizashi, and my Dai Katana, which in the illustrious Nihongo means giant sword.
Hey, Katana Guy, I've often heard that European steel was better than the katana.
Who did you hear that from? Clearly, they don't know anything about the folding process of the... I have to laugh. Huh, I bet they think Damascus is superior. No, any European, that's just people who think the West is so good. No, thank you for the laugh. There's no possible way that any Euro trash could ever come close to touching the honor and glory of Nihon steel. Impossible. No one would ever. An immaculate katana blade would cut straight through a claymore, greatsword, any European trash you want to throw at the amazing Japanese sword work would be completely obliterated in one blow.
I'd just like to point out that I just let Steve talk for 2 minutes straight with no interruption, just because I thought that it's good to yes and him. So we're running out of time, and I'm not even gonna say like until next week, because how are you gonna top a 2 minute katana immaculate katana blade
rant
so until next time, Steve, later
Game
Classy.